We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Monty Poole continues a full Monty Friday. We already said hello to Monty McCutcheon. Monty Poole from NBC Sports here talking a little Warriors basketball first half and what we're expecting in the second. Monty, thank you so much for joining us today. How you doing, man?
I'm doing okay. How was Kutch?
What's that?
How is McCutcheon?
Good. How is McCutcheon? Anyone? I don't know. What are you talking about?
Monty was great. No, Monty.
Oh, Monty McCutcheon.
Oh, sorry. The other Monty.
Yeah. Oh, he was great. I'm thinking of Andrew McCutcheon. I'm thinking of Pirates and spring training. You caught me off guard there, Monty.
I apologize.
No. Monty was really, really good. You know what? Officiating in the NBA is almost as hard as playing in it, is the one thing that we walked away with there. So I think he's right about it in many, many ways. Playing it in the NBA was really hard for the Warriors last night. Obviously, they were very, very shorthanded, but we had really, really nice looks, I thought, at Jordan Poole. And in a way, Nico Mannion was more than I expected him to be. Are we taking lessons from that game last night and applying them early in the second half? Have we looked at a spot for Poole and maybe even Mannion in this rotation now?
Well, when they drafted Nico, I talked to a couple of people there and around the league, and they were like, well, you know, we think he has a chance to compete for the backup point guard spot. And they had just signed Brad Wanamaker. And obviously, Brad struggled all year. I think Steve likes Nico, and I think that he'll get a shot to play some minutes now. Now, how he does will dictate whether he sticks or not, but they like him. The question is whether they like him, how much they like him right now. But I would think that he'll get a look in the second half and play some point guard minutes. And Jordan is, it's a different deal. I mean, it's like the belief in Jordan, there's two sides there within the organization. Some people think that Jordan can play, and others aren't sure. So I think Steve is a little skeptical and needs to see it to believe it. And what he saw last night was encouraging. But I will say this, that in talking to a scout, NBA scout, about 2 weeks ago, he said, you know, Jordan Poole is one of the few guys on that roster who can get his own shot. And you saw it last night, you know. So I think that's going to be the key for Jordan. He can get a shot, yeah, but he has to defend. I think that's where Steve is kind of like, let's see if defend a little bit, because we need the point guard to defend. And if Jordan can defend at a decent level, he'll get minutes because he can create offense. Now, again, I think he's 21, so he's still young in his career, early going. But he does have some game. The question is how much. And he has grown in the year that he's been here. So I would think, again, I think both of those guys will get looks because they need something out of that second unit, and they're not getting very much right now.
How much of the assumptions that the team is making about Poole are based on the notion that what he provides may be less necessary once Thompson comes back?
That may be a factor, but, I mean, I honestly – I think Jordan is probably better at getting his shot than Clay. I mean, Clay's thing is different, man. He just, you know, the 11 dribble game where he scores 1,000 points. If Clay starts to dribble, then it becomes a little bit of an adventure. And you just want to play to shoot, catch and shoot, catch and shoot. And when he does that, he's phenomenal. Jordan is different. He really has sort of a point guard mentality, and so I think that they think him as a combo guard, which means, to me at least, that he's someone that can kind of slide in and play one or two as needed. Now, again, I think, can Jordan play with Clay? I think it's possible that he can. Now, you know, again, he's shown some progress in 1 year. We'll see where he goes next year. But I think that's possible because his skill set is he actually looks more comfortable at the one than the two. And Clay is totally a 2-3 guy. So I think the two of them can play together at some point.
If you had to guess, I mean, there's all sorts of big old trade deals being thrown around. But putting aside whether it's a blockbuster or not, the Warriors do have that trade exception to use. They do have, really, trades as the only way to make roster changes at this point. Do you anticipate them doing something before the deadline?
Well, you know, had they won these last two games, then I think so. But when they lost at Portland, well, they lost at L.A. first. They lost at Portland. Then they lose at Phoenix. I'm really not sure what they want to do right now. I'm not sure they know. They're one above 500, so they have to ask themselves, how far can we go if we make a deal, and how big of a deal do we have to make to get any traction? Steph was saying a couple of days ago that, you know, the best-case scenario with the four is the four seed. That's not happening. I don't see that happening. It's just you've got Utah, the L.A. teams, and Phoenix, and the Warriors are pretty far behind the Suns right now, and the Suns look like a team that's going to be around for a while. So the Warriors have to ask themselves how – hard they want to chase the sixth seed because that's more realistic. But the way they're playing right now, they won't even get there. And so to make a blockbuster deal, that means they're going all in this year. And I don't get the sense that this year is about going all in. I think that this year is kind of a let's see how we do. And next year is the year I think they figure, okay, you know what? Let's see if they make a move then. So I'd be surprised a little bit right now if they make a deal, a big deal, in the middle of this, before the trade deadline late this month.
Monty Poole here on 95.7 The Game. When it comes to James Wiseman, do you think that patience and staying the course is the right way to plot his career, or would you like to see them push a little harder to try to get something out of him a little bit more?
No. The thing about Wiseman is that he's got some obvious skill and talent, and he's obviously athletic and long. But, yeah, there are some things you look at and go, okay, is this because he's 19 or is this because he is what he is? And that those two things to me are physicality, which he's not very physical at all. And the question is, how physical can he be? Right now he's a 7'1", 245-pound 19-year-old. And the question is, okay, you know, if he adds 10 pounds over the next few years, will that change? And I'm told that his mentality is there. That he wants to be that guy. So I need to see it. Last night, he showed some of that. I think he had 10 rebounds. But, you know, he's had some games where he's played 22 minutes and gotten 3 rebounds. And to me, that's about desire and physicality and about timing. And he is still learning the game. You know, we keep talking about the 3 college games that he played. That's all he had. And, you know, he missed training camp, all of that. I look at his numbers, though, and his numbers are right there with some of the guys, most of the bigs that you've seen in the league right now that are pretty good. And the thing about James is that if he wants to be like his idol, and I'm talking about Kevin Garnett, he needs to be more ferocious. And I don't know if he's just, you know, taking his time, if he's learning, or if this is just a guy who feels he can rely on his athleticism to get by, because he has that, but his ceiling is up to him and how much he wants to chase it. The Warriors say, no, he is ambitious. And there are just times when I wonder if he's just caught and wondering, you know, thinking too much or, you know, how badly does he want it? I'm not sure yet, but I think right now his numbers are decent for a guy in his position. I think you write it out for a while and see where it is. I don't believe that, oh, my God, they made a giant mistake. No, I don't think that at all.
Through 37 games, what is their view of what they think Andrew Wiggins is? Has it changed from the beginning of the season? Has it shrunk? Has it grown? What's their position there?
They'll say that it's the same. But There's no question that there's some disappointment in the way he's played in the past few weeks. You know, I think their main thing with Andrew coming into the season was, if he can defend, you know, we'll live with his offense. And then his offense was really good for the first 5-6 weeks. And he's still defending pretty well, but his offense has regressed. And the question is, okay, is this just a funk? And he needs the break and see how he looks when he comes out of the break. If I'm the Warriors, I think, let's see how he looks coming out of the break. Because they say they're invested in him, and they say they still invested in him. But the question is, to me, okay, he's defending like you want him to. But Steve was saying the other night, Kurt was saying, we need a second scorer to step up. To me, he didn't mention Andrew, but, you know, Andrew's the number two scorer on this team, especially when Oubre is out. So, to me, that's a shout-out. And they're saying, we need more from Andrew. And I've seen Andrew have games where he was really good on offense. You know, he's got a number of 40-point games in his career, so he can do it. But I don't know if it's just a thing where his mechanics are off or whether he's a little bit whether he's just sort of in an emotional funk or something. Because it's different covering these teams when you're not around them. You know, you don't get to talk to guys in the locker room. You don't get to just spark up a conversation for a couple of minutes and get a feel for what's going on. Everything is done through Zoom and occasional text message and phone calls, and it's a different feel. So a lot of things that we're doing are guesswork, because it's hard to get a real good, clear vision of what the mentality is and what the vibe is around the team.
Around the world, as a matter of fact, these days.
Zoom, baby.
Yeah, you know it. Monty, thank you very much once again for joining us. It's always a pleasure. Enjoy your All-Star break. Put your feet up for a week and relax. Thank you very, very much.
All right, guys. Have a good Friday.
Is the man right there. Monty Poole here on 95.7 The Game. We're going to keep the Good Friday rolling along, and maybe even some good news for getting back into the ballpark. We're going to share that with you when we come on back. And we do have some sound from last night that we haven't even gotten into about Kerr talking about Poole, Mannion, Wiseman's development and goals for the second half. We're going to come on back with all that here on 95.7 The Game in just a moment. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, we're brought to you by the Department of Healthcare Services.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Come on. It is really good to have you here on a Friday afternoon, and depending on where your mind is, this could be some really good news that we're about to share with you, or maybe this is going to make you concerned. Either way, it is looking more and more like we are going to have fans come opening day. Not everyone, limited capacity, but I mean, would we start out like in the, there was the Golden Age, and then there was the Silver Age, and the Bronze Age, and you get to your Iron Age, and then you get to the Industrial Revolution and all this stuff. The Cardboard Age is coming to an end at Major League ballparks. Today it was announced that the state of California's restrictions are going to allow the San Francisco Giants about 8,000 fans. If everything continues to track in a positive direction, the home opener is on April 9th and limited capacity across the entire state for outdoor venues. We're talking about ballparks, stadiums, theme parks could be reopening to limited capacity on April 1st. Again, the Giants home opener is April 9th. 20% is just over 8,000 fans if they were to be allowed in. And I'm feeling more and more like, guys, we're approaching the reality where that can be done with a level of safety that, should you be just willing to take the inherent risk that we all take whenever we leave our front doors, many, I think, would be glad to take to get back to a ballpark as early as April 9th and sit outdoors and think, I'm in a safer situation than I've been in a year. Whether they're right or wrong, we'll all find out together, I guess. But you can kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel a little bit here, and I'm going to dare to frame that as good news.
I don't know if it's good news only because the virus has had a mind of its own throughout. I think I'll probably have a better feeling maybe by April 5th. But, you know, I know that Texas and Mississippi basically said, you don't have to wear your masks anymore, and everything's fine. We're just going to operate as normal. Right at the time that that ice storm that hit Texas and Louisiana and Mississippi had jacked up the COVID rates again. So I'm viewing it as temporary. And until I see a lot more people getting vaccinated, I'm not going to be wary, but I'm just going to be value neutral on it.
Well, I think there's two separate things here. One is, I don't think I would go. You know, that's a personal choice on my end, that just the risk of coming into passing contact with that many people is one that I'm not especially interested in at this moment, if I can avoid it. So that's me. But as far as the does this feel wildly irresponsible part of it, just in the interest of public safety and humanity, I think they're in fine territory here. You know, you hope a lot more people have been vaccinated by April 9th, clearly. You know, but you got the president saying by May it'll be the whole country. So presumably if that's on track, you're going to be well on your way. They're in an outdoor space. I assume there will be mask wearing. They're obviously talking about a significantly limited capacity, which if you think people going in pods and sitting in groups of, you know, 2 to 8, there's going to be a decent amount of space between them. It sounds to me like about the risk level of going and dining outdoors, you know, and I'm okay with giving people the option to do that.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like the time. And here's the thing. We all kind of agreed to a set of rules when this all started, and never among the set of rules was, and when everything is perfect, then we go back to normal. That right. was never agreed upon. What Texas is doing, what other states maybe are deciding to do with 100%, take your mask off, forget it, they even owned one, we're all back to everything's normal, olly, olly, oxen free, that was never in the steps and the plans to do it. That is a bad choice.
Insane.
It is a bad choice. It's the single best way to invite the problem back in to hang out with you. The way that California is looking at this is the way we all agreed we would do it. Step-by-step, incremental inclusion back to normal. Not for indoor venues either. This isn't indoor. Not yet. Outdoor? Yeah. I feel like this is pretty much going according to the plan. And yeah, there have been so many steps along the way that have been offensive, either intellectually or just, you know, just that's what kind of a pig-headed, arrogant person do you have to be to do that? You just got angry at things. This is the first time I'm seeing stories about how we all get back where I'm not saying to myself, well, that's ridiculous. You just can't do it that way. That's the wrong way to go about it. Hopefully, 8,000 fans sitting in a stadium with an awful lot feeling good about their health conditions is a safe thing. Same thing once again. I tell you, I'd feel a lot better going to a Giants game and sitting view level in the upper deck than in the press box right now. Like when I'm offered to go back into a baseball stadium, I guarantee you it'll probably be as a fan and I'll be more comfortable with that. I'll be more comfortable mingling with however many fans that are let in than I will be in an indoor space with a less number but more tightly crammed in there pack of journalists. And it's got nothing to do with my, you know, half inherent hatred for the baseball voters of America as that goes. That's got nothing to do with it. That's another show. But I bet you I'm back in the bleachers before I'm back in the press box.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, the press box seems like a much more dangerous proposition.
Yeah, I don't know if it is or not, but the thing I'm thinking about is not the controlled area, which is the seats, but how you get in and out of the ballpark and how they're going to govern how they let people gather outside the ballpark where they don't have control. Because that's where you can get COVID just as easily.
Sure.
And,
but that's on you.
So
that's on you.
Well,
the Giants,
okay,
the Giants,
but,
Major League Baseball
can't be
responsible for how you get to the ballpark.
Okay, but I'm not talking about whether they should. I'm saying that my decision is also going to be guided by the number of people who gather to go to the ballpark and how they view their responsibility before they get in. Because the idea is not, well, is this safe enough? It's, can I not get COVID today? And I can guarantee you that the dangers of going into the ballpark will be greater than once you get there. But danger is danger. That's right. Why I would be value neutral on this.
Right. It's like going to the airport. You're in a lot more danger on the drive to the airport than you're going to be in the airplane ride across the ocean. You know, there's
not for COVID, but for a crash, you mean.
Right, exactly. Yeah, your mortality rate.
Right.
Anyway, got a guy here who says, I'm an archaeologist. Thumbs up on mentioning the Bronze Age. Shout out the Bronze Age. So there you go.
Great job. I do think, though, Ray, that's sort of where it's – I get to make my decision to not go and to not put myself at the risk of traveling there and going into the stadium and, you know – how many people were trying to leave the stadium at once and all those sorts of things. But I do think that I'm okay with that being a personal choice. And if it's worth it to somebody to go see a baseball game live, as long as the baseball team provides a safe place to watch baseball, I think they're doing their job.
Well, my question would be, and again, I'm not criticizing the ballparks and the ball teams for, doing what the state is allowing them to do. But personal choice aside, the question I have is they're gathering to see your event. And I think that comes with it sort of a level of prudence that doesn't start at the gate, but outside it. And I think it would do the Giants and A's, I presume this covers them as well, a way to make, once you come into the parking lot or once you, approach the ballpark, that they're proactive about mask wearing and social distancing. Because if you get it just outside the ballpark and then bring it in, you're still, creating situations where people in the ballpark can get it. So
Fine.
Well, but I think that's important. And I think that's one of the things that gets missed here. It's the responsibility for the ball team, I think, comes before people get in the controlled area. I think the Giants and A's have to be more proactive about, okay, how do you let people gather outside the ballpark to get in it? And if they're going to do that, I have less problem than if they just go, well, we'll gather as always and we'll stand in line like we always have, and then we'll start worrying about social distancing.
Sure. Yeah. No, agreed. They have to get them inside safely. I agree with that. I just, they can't police who's on BART.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, in a perfect world, they would be more concerned before their realistic things that they should be concerned about officially begins, but they can't. You can't expect them to do that. Where should their concern begin? At the gate? At the Willie Mays and Juan Marichal statue? Right at the corner of 24th and King? Well, what about the intersection? Is that a crowded intersection? I mean, it's not their responsibility. Their responsibility is it's safe to be in here. You get here, it's up to you. There is no assumed personal, nothing can ever go wrong again. That world is behind us. There's assumed risk in everything we do. There's going to be plenty of assumed risk going back out. When you're comfortable assuming that risk, it looks like they're going to be allowing people back in the ballpark. So something for everyone to consider. Me, I'm going to wait till I'm all vaxxed up before I start mingling with the good crowd again. But boy, I can't wait until that happens because I can't wait to go back out and just be, hey, how are you, total stranger? Hi. I was the guy who would be in a cocktail situation where someone else is like, man, that looks good. I'd be like, hey, total stranger, take a sip. I was the opposite of a germaphobe my entire life. Like I never even thought of germs until, March 12th of last year when we all saw each other last or whatever that date was. We're coming up on that anniversary, man. We're steamrolling at it. A full year.
I'd really say it went crazy.
Yeah, I'd say it went by fast, but that would be the biggest bold-faced lie I ever told the audience. It was not fast.
Yeah, it did not go by fast. It is just 100% longer than I ever could have imagined. I mean, I never in my wildest dreams when we got sent home could I have imagined a year later we'd still be here.
Me neither. Yeah.
I was thinking, you know, a few weeks, maybe if it's really bad, a few months. But and then at a certain point, I was like, all right, this is pretty rough, but we'll be back by the end of the year. And now I'm no longer predicting anything.
Yeah, I don't know that I was as sanguine as you guys, only because the people who were running all the decision-making areas of what's safe and what isn't were different than they are now. And so I thought if they could screw something up, they would absolutely do it, and in ways that we could never have envisioned. So just because of that, not because of anything else, I thought this might take a good long while. This long? I thought it might have blown over, you know, by November. But then somebody reminded me, well, people go to Thanksgiving together, and then people go to Christmas together. And it blew up again. Yeah. So, you know, I sort of just like despaired of ever predicting when this might get better. And I'm not sure it's better yet.
Every single time it looked like there was an opportunity to turn a corner, we turned the other corner. You know, it kept on going and going and going, and it ain't over yet. That is for sure. But boy, it looks like the light at the end of the tunnel. If you squint enough, you can finally see it coming. And for you, and I don't mean either one of you two, but for the listener, for you, it still might be a year away. It still might be more than that. It might be, you might not even realize the psychological damage that this has done to people until you start getting that full on, hey, you can go back out. You can't, your favorite band is playing a concert. And instead of 30,000 people, there's 18. Like that's going to happen. This is going to scar a part of the generation forever. It really will. It's going to be a whole different world when we go back out in it. But for those ready to rock, we will salute you. It's going to be kind of awesome. I think the Roaring Twenties, we will do it eventually here this decade. I really hope so. Those who stayed will be rewarded. I'd love to think that that's true. I really would. I know a lot of people for a lot of reasons said, I'm out. And I get it. I'd like to think those who stayed will be rewarded with a hell of a town. It's just ready to go. Someone says on the text line, is the plan to only let in vaccinated fans? I don't believe so. I don't know. I don't know if we're ever going to be asked to produce some sort of proof of vaccination. No one who has gotten the vaccination has told me that they have been given a piece of, okay, so you show this to anyone now, or you can just, here's your vaccine.
Well,
I got
you
vaccinated badge.
You do get a little card, you know.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Like they still, yes.
Like a Honus Wagner?
Yeah, I think it's as much so they can like be like, oh, you're the person who got the first half when they give you the second half, you know. But I don't know that it's the sort of thing you're expected to carry around with you and produce at restaurants and sporting events.
If you're smart, though, you will, just in case.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It would be good.
Laminate that sucker and keep it around.
Yeah, they make it wallet size.
Just say, look, you have a license to drive a car. You have a license to go to a restaurant. It might be the world that we're living in.
Look, I would not be against that because, you know, now that this vaccine is here, we really should not tolerate people who don't want to get it or who think they should just be able to do whatever they want without getting it.
So have you changed your position on NBA players being, hey, everybody, go get it. Cut the PSA. Don't worry about past that is certainly disgraceful. We got to move forward in the right direction. Are you coming around?
I never said I didn't want them to shoot those PSAs. I said it would be great, but I understood their reticence given the history. And you know, no, my opinion has not changed.
A plus on reticence. And we had a meeting earlier this week, and you used vexing.
Last night, Ray
and I stopped the meeting, and we both applauded Matt's use of the word vexing. We were both, wow, we need to make vexing on the show a little bit more.
It's a show that cares about vocabulary. No one's ever said otherwise.
I'd be vexed.
I don't think
you did.
Anybody's ever brought the subject up, but that's just me.
Yesterday, speaking of vexing, I went with confounding in the same scenario, and I felt really good about that. I'm confounded.
A plus. So
you're on your way to disputatious.
Thank you, Ray. I appreciate that.
I mean, let's not get arrogant.
You've always believed in me, Ray.
You know what I think we have when it comes to Steve Kerr, the way he looks at rookies, the way he looks at unproven players? I think he and Bruce Bochy are from that same old school. There is definitely a generation of players, or excuse me, coaches, managers, who have forever believed that young players get good coaches fired. As a matter of fact, I think that's like a saying. It's like a little bit of a cliche. I know Don Nelson was a big believer in that as well, that young, talented players get good, experienced coaches fired all the time. And, you know, I look at Steve Kerr looking at his guys that he needs to develop, and you can tell that he doubts it. You can tell that he doubts it. Now, a lot of the time, the doubt has been well-founded, because until James Wiseman, Kerr never had a rookie drafted above number 28 in the draft. And when you're drafting at number 28, you're already in the, well, good luck with that, draft position. Nothing is guaranteed at 8, much less 28. So, you know, 5 trips to the finals, 3 titles, and now he's in asked to kind of turn to a new generation, and he's reluctant to do that. Bruce Bochy was reluctant to do that until the guy to turn to was Buster Posey. And you could see clearly right away Buster Posey is worth saying goodbye to Benji Molina for. And they made that hard move, and they had quite a bit of success after that move. Kerr has not had his Buster Posey. Maybe James Wiseman will be that guy. I really hope he is. I went back and look. Kerr is hired in 2014. By the way, you should look that season up, Warriors fans. It was a good year. Kerr gets hired in 2014. They win that title. So his first pick is the 30th pick of the draft, and the reason why we have a fascination with Kevon Looney to this day is because that's Kerr's first pick. That's Kevon Looney was Steve Kerr's first draft pick as head coach of the Golden State Warriors, followed by Damian Jones, total bust, total disappointment. Patrick McCaw, total bust, total disappointment. Jordan Bell, bust. I won't say total bust, but I'll say bust disappointment. Jacob Evans, total bust disappointment. Jordan Poole didn't come out guns a-blazing in a bad situation. I'm not surprised that Kerr got rattled and doubted him. Followed by Adam Smilagich, Eric Paschal, James Wiseman, Nico Mannion, and Justinian Jessup, who's obviously parked overseas right now. So he hasn't.
Looking good, though.
Yeah, oh, he is. That's another subject, boy. But, yeah, he is looking good. If it mattered for LaMelo, can it matter for him, too? I know why Steve doesn't believe in young guys. He hasn't had a young guy worthy to believe in yet. I hope Jordan Poole showed him a reason to believe a little bit more. And I think if he believes in James Wiseman a little bit more and is less concerned about James Wiseman's feelings going home every night, he'll have a better player there than he's ever experienced as a rookie. And that's why James Wiseman needs to play more, and he needs to play, period. That's it.
I know you don't want to go off on a tangent, but I have to defend Bruce Bochy here, because his first year in San Francisco, he put Matt Cain and Tim Lincecum into the rotation. He went to Buster Posey in 2009, which was a year after he got drafted. And he had a ton of young pitchers that he went to right away. So I don't think he was anti-young player. I think he was very pro-good young player. And the Giants at that time did not
Ray,
have
that was the whole point of the analogy.
Well, but he included Bochy as, you know, as one of those guys who was reluctant to play young guys. And I don't think the evidence supports that.
Right, but it really doesn't matter. But the point that Damon was making is that the San Francisco Giants, whoever's responsibility it was, didn't have a lot of good young guys, and they didn't play their young guys, and then they got good young guys, and they played them fine. So it really never was that anyone had a reluctance against playing young guys. It's that they didn't have good young guys until they had them, and then they played them. And I think what Damon's suggesting is that that is sort of the approach required with James Wiseman. It's understandable that you have questions about how young guys are going to perform if you have not seen young guys perform in your 5 years, 6 years as head coach. But this guy's different. That's the point.
Well, no, I understand what the big point was. I was just trying to make the point, and I said it was a side point, is that Bochy was actually pretty good with young guys. I mean, as long as they were, you know. I mean, he started Pablo Sandoval for 154 games when he was 22. So I don't think he was ever anti-young guy. That's all I'm saying.
It really wasn't designed to be a giant segment, Ray.
I know that, but I just wanted to say, since you included him in this, I wanted to simply say that he was not that guy.
But the point of the analogy is that Steve Kerr doesn't have to be that guy either.
Right.
Right? That's the whole point. Steve Kerr might not be that guy either. We don't really know yet with Steve Kerr because he hasn't had a young guy good enough to answer the question. So while we may have thought of Bochy as that guy who didn't want to play young guys, the whole point of the analogy is that as it turned out, he was fine with young guys. They just had to be good enough to play.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully that's Steve Kerr's approach as well.
You shouldn't care where the good idea comes from, just that you finally reached it. And they got a good idea. Certainly, James Wiseman might not be as refined as Kevon Looney.
Or as Buster Posey.
But he is so much better of a basketball idea on his worst day than Kevon Looney will ever be on his best day. So it's time. I know that, like, you know, Loon and Kerr got a lot of road together. There's a lot of love there. You got to drop that off at the firehouse. Knock it off.
Also,
like this, Steve Kerr is, here's the deal. I guess the point is this, and then we'll take a real quick break, and then we'll come on back and we'll scream for 40 minutes because that's our longest commercial-free interrupted segment of the entire day, baby. Steve Kerr is constantly seeking the choice he is more comfortable with. He thinks the team's going to be a little bit more comfortable with, that defensively he's going to be a little bit more comfortable with. And I think the Golden State Warriors right now need to be a little less concerned with everybody's comfort, especially Steve's. I don't care if Steve is more comfortable with Kevon Looney. Steve's comfort level with Kevon Looney isn't as important to this franchise's future as James Wiseman's development.
And I don't think they would say it is either. And I don't think it's as simple as that, right? If it was that simple, they'd already have made the Wiseman decision to put him back in the starting lineup. I think it's trying to juggle a win tonight with everyone's comfort level, with Wiseman's development. It's just a lot of balls in the air, and it's tough.
It is tough. And the easiest path through the tough is play the second overall pick in the draft, because that's what happens when you have the second overall pick in the draft. On every other team in the league, the Warriors are not so light years ahead that they can afford to slow play the second pick in the draft. Come on. Come on. 888-957-9570 is the number. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, we are brought to you by Fremont Bank Full Service Banking. No compromises. Right now, our Exergen temperature check tells us it's partly cloudy, 64 degrees in beautiful downtown San Jose.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Thanks so much for stopping on by today. In about an hour, we're going to wrap up our week with Kolsky's Corner. Got ourselves a 5 o'clock hour that is coming at us fast, strong. It's going to be a good one, so stay with us. Right now, though, we get things going with a conversation with one of our basketball friends. Mark Medina used to kick it around here in the Bay Area. He is now based out of LA, working for USA Today. Must be a new outfit. Really good to have him here on 95.7 The Game. What's going on, Mark Medina? It's been too long.
Damon, always great to hear your voice. How are you holding up?
We're doing really good. Thanks for joining us, as always. What an interesting first half the NBA has had overall. The Golden State Warriors, they're certainly something to talk about each and every time that we look at them. Just at the halfway point, do you think, Mark, that the the Golden State Warriors have met, exceeded, or fell short of your expectations to now?
I think by and large they've met them. I thought that they would always be either a game or below 500, and I think that that's something that you'll see throughout the second half of the season where, you know, it's the perfect storm of you don't have, obviously, Klay Thompson. You can rely on Steph Curry, but everything else is a question mark, you know, as far as, you know, what version of Draymond Green you get, James Wiseman's development, how the supporting cast is. So I expect them to make the playoffs, maybe even advance past the first round or at least provide a speed bump for a top seed. But it could very well go the other way. But I think that applies for, you know, basically seeds 5 through 10 in the West because you have so many different depth charts because of COVID and injuries that it's been all across the board here.
Looking at the top of the conference, are you yet prepared to consider the possibility that Phoenix might actually be better than the Lakers and Clippers, at least until the Lakers get Anthony Davis back and at full running capacity? Are they at least better than the Clippers, or are they realistically the fourth of four teams?
If I had to guess, I think they'll end up at as the fourth seed because I think the Lakers and Clippers will start getting better when the games count. And then to your point with the Lakers, Anthony Davis coming back. But I think they have shown that they're very well capable of being an elite team. I think that they're more likely to be better than the Clippers than the Lakers, only because the Lakers, their shortcomings recently really have to do with the fact that Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder were out. And Schroeder's back. You don't want to take an Achilles injury lightly, as you guys know, with Kevin Durant, but I think the Lakers are going to do all the right things and making sure they don't rush Davis back. So I think when he comes back, it's just going to be LeBron, AD, and everyone else against the field. But, yeah, I think the Suns are to be reckoned with, and I don't want to say I was surprised because Chris Paul's shown that he could avoid injuries the last few years. Devin Booker is a proven all-star and should have been named that before Adam Silver decided to have him as a replacement. And they have really great coach in Monty Williams. So they're very deserving with where they're at this point.
We are at the All-Star break, and we knew we were going to have the break. We didn't always know that we were going to have the game. Just fundamentally, are you surprised that this game is actually happening?
I'm not surprised because the NBA has shown a track record of trying to maximize that TV revenue. And I understand, obviously, the financial component, but I also I can side with the NBA in the sense that, you know, in the pandemic, nothing's risk-free, but you can make the argument that having at least the marquee players subject to protocols is safer, relatively speaking, than giving them the break where they're not under that supervision. But I do have a problem with when you're in a compressed season and you're giving guys less time to rest and recuperate, how that's going to affect from a performance standpoint and an injury standpoint down the line. But, you know, money ultimately prevails, and that's that.
Mark Medina, USA Today, and I tell you what you wrote about the All-Star game or the draft ahead of the All-Star game is one of the reasons why I was like, can we talk to Mark today? It's been too long. Does LeBron James realize that he was not slandering the Utah Jazz? All he was doing was slandering the Utah Jazz. Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert are the last two picks in this draft, and he basically says, there's no slander there. You guys just got to understand, like in video games, we never played with the Utah Jazz. Even as great Karl Malone and John Stockton were, nobody chose the Utah Jazz. Doesn't LeBron understand that that is the walking, talking definition of Utah slander?
Oh, believe me, this was completely intentional. Like, if he wanted to feign ignorance, he should have done what Kevin Durant did at the beginning, where he said, I put zero thought into this. I don't want to say that they went into the draft saying, we're definitely going to pick Utah last. But I think as they were in the middle of it, they decided that. And I think you can also look at LeBron specifically. Paul George was one of the players that was at the bottom, too. And I think that he's looking at this through a rivalry lens, where he looks at the Utah Jazz, and you know they have the top seed in not only the conference and the league, and he wants to add some chippiness to it. And I think he's doing the same thing with Paul George being the third to last selection among the reserves.
All right, let's get goofy about this then, and take an all-star draft to its total conclusion. Has LeBron James just admitted that he is more afraid of the Jazz than the Suns?
Well, I think that you have to mix with LeBron that competitive part, and then the fraternization that he has in friendships, where he's a good friend of Chris Paul, always has been. And with Devin Booker, you know, you wonder, hey, he's not going to be a free agent anytime soon, but if he's considered disrespected, as he says, you know, that could plant the seeds for down the line where he could be eligible to leave. So I think there is those things in play. But it wasn't as blatant as it was in other years, because there's no pending free agents this upcoming season that he could then, you know, market beyond Kawhi. But he's opting out and just coming back to the Clippers. So I think he decided to mix the allegiance there this time around, as opposed to just going free agency recruiting mode.
The three best players who don't get to play this weekend are?
Let's see. Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis. Where am I missing the other guy?
Okay, let's eliminate guys who would have played had they not gotten hurt.
Yeah, honestly, I'm confused where you're asking. So the guys in the All-Star game that aren't going to be – that got snubbed, basically?
Well, I mean – and I don't know if they got snubbed, because I don't know who should come off these teams, but there are more than 24 really good players in the NBA now. And guys, yeah. I guess what I'm asking is, who are the next three guys?
Honestly, I can't really think of them. I only thought with the snubs that Devin Booker should have been in instead of Zion Williamson, because – you know, this whole adage that you reward players that help a team's winning record. And I thought with Zion, he was great as a second-year guy, but they weren't, you know, winning games consistently. So I think you would throw Brandon Ingram in there. He has shown a lot of growth, but I think the things that are holding those two young players back is that it just hasn't translated to consistent wins yet. I think you could throw Mike Conley in there as well, because you know he is part of it
every year. Like he's always every year you can put him in there.
Yeah, exactly. But I was not as concerned about that, only because Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert rightfully got their due. So yeah, those are really the only two guys that I can think of that you could make a case for. But other than, you know, Booker being left off initially instead of Zion, I thought all the picks were what they should have been.
The correct answer was Jordan Poole, by the way. So, yeah.
Andrew Wiggins getting disrespected.
Yeah, well, I mean, LaMelo Ball, he should have been in there too.
There you go. That's a good one.
Hey, if you want stars, he is one. Put him in. Hey, thank you so much, Mark. Great to talk to you as always. I'm sure we'll catch up some point in time in the second half, especially with the Lakers sharpening their fangs for a repeat. We're always, always appreciative of your time, man. Enjoy the week off.
All right, man. It won't be a week off, but I'll enjoy it. It should be a fun one on Sunday.
Mixing a cocktail when you can. Thank you very much, Mr. Mark Medina, the USA Today here on 95.7 The Game. Always good to have that guy on for sure. He was mentioning about Zion. Guys, I found this a day or two ago, so the numbers might have changed a little bit, but just assume all of this was correct and canon 48 hours ago. It was when the Pelicans got their big win over the Jazz this past week. The Pelicans became the first team to score 70 points in the paint against the Utah Jazz in 25 years. Zion, because New Orleans is always under the radar, and because he's not the three-point evolution or necessarily even the highlight reel that you want him to be every night now, but he is a monster and destroyer of the paint. Pelicans, they feel like underachievers. They still got a lot to learn, obviously. This is a guy who hasn't even played 60 regular season NBA games yet, and he has averaged 20 points in the paint in the month of February. which is the most in an NBA month in 18 years. He is a throwback. I mean, he is Mr. Let me beat you down low. He is fifth in the league in player efficiency rating, and he's going to be able to have his first legal beer this summer. He's only 20 years old. Zion Williamson needs to be in this All-Star game. Always needed to be in this All-Star game. The guy's awesome. He's playing a style of basketball that no one would ask a young man to play, and that's an advantage for them.
It does tend to beg the question, is he the last of his kind? I don't know the answer to that because he hasn't played enough, and I don't know where basketball is going to be in 5 years, but he does seem to have old guy skills, not meaning like old in terms of age, but old in terms of the way the game was played a decade ago. And so I wonder if, as good as he is and as good as I think he's going to be, whether you won't see another guy like him.
I just think with a guy like that, he's one of one. You know, are we going to see another Kevin Garnett? Are we going to see another LeBron James? Are we going to see another? He's just so exceptionally specific, both physically and basketball skill wise. I don't think we ever have, nor will we ever again see a player like Zion. As far as the points in the paint, though, I think we've pretty clearly established that we're seeing more and more guys these days who look like they'll be capable of doing a lot of that. You know, I'm sure a huge percentage of Joel Embiid's points are in the paint. Jokic, you know, even though those guys can stretch out, and I'm sure the Pelicans want Zion to be able to stretch out eventually too, I think we are seeing an influx of players into this league where paint scoring is a part of their game. What makes Zion so unique is the physical ability in his body combined with a level of skill that now that they've put the ball in his hands more, you can really see he can pass. He knows where to move on the floor. He's a smart, talented player. And then you have the, we've never seen a guy that size jump like that.
I love the yin and the yang of sports strategy. The entire world is going out to the three-point line. And the one guy is like, well, I'm just going to go ahead and crush it from 8 feet and in, see what that gets me. It's doing really well for him. There's always a market adjustment to be made, and it looks like Zion has found him. When the Pelicans get good around him, they might be interesting for sure. Meanwhile, let me welcome everybody just a few ticks late to their 5 o'clock hour.